On today's episode of Pennies Going In Raw, we have on Nathan Michaud, a.k.a. Investors Live.
Hey, yo, check 1, 2. This is Flavor Flav in the building for the Atlas crew.
Atlas Trading, what the f*** is up?
They're traders, they're prodigies, and then there's legends.
Rob, 4%, baby.
No way.
4%
Buy the f***ing dip.
Hey, who told me about IDEX?
Like, dude, what the fuck? Like, someone just made, like, a lot more money than me on my trade.
You find out, life's this game of pennies.
Did you check the portfolio?
Pennies.
The margin for error is so small.
I bet Warren Buffett never did that.
And they out here making money right now off of penny stocks.
The two guys is putting in work to make y'all rich.
The pennies we need are everywhere around us.
Time to think big.
Pennies going in raw.
Featuring Dan, Deity at Dips,
and Hugh Henny.
Produced by Vinny Strokes, baby.
Today's episode of Pennies Going In Raw is brought to you by Benzinga. We use Benzinga every day when we trade. It has the absolute best news scanners, charts, chat rooms. It has everything you need every day when you trade. Make sure to get it as 2 weeks free that you can use today at pro.benzinga.com. But that's not all they have. Their YouTube channel every single day, Monday through Friday. Live damn near all day. YouTube.com/Benzinga has Hot Stocks Luke on it and tons of guests ranging from me and Hugh Henny to Mia Khalifa to the CEO of Webull. They go all out and it's awesome. Make sure to check it out. That's YouTube.com/Benzinga. And now, yeah, we have on Nate Michaud. I pronounced his name wrong during the interview. Please forgive me, guys. And the interview was a little late, so I was a little tipsy. But, you know, I think this interview is going to be great for right here during this time. What's going on? We didn't get a big chance to talk about CCIV. This was last week before it all went down. But I think this should be a lot of help. So with no further ado, Investors Live. All right. And today we have on Nate Michaud. And It's tough to introduce you. I wanted to say Twitter investor, a.k.a. the person who paid the most to avoid a motorcycle towing. you know, it's crazy to even try and get your story. And I don't even want to. I'd love to get it from you if you can make it concise. But from what I have, it's like college kid that had a fantastic earnings report that he forgot about, made some money off that. Just became the ultimate pre-front loader to notice the front load, bank off that, and then motorcycle issue, lose money off that. SEC knocks on your door, then you realize you have an account with 25 grand in it, and then it's like rebound time. And I'm like, this is the craziest thing, and it's only like a 5-year span. Make that make sense for me.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. So I started my college freshman year as you pretty much kind of went into, but I had no idea what I was doing. And like you said, it was I was always interested in trading. And so I did forget about an earnings report. It wasn't much money, but it was maybe a couple $100, a couple $1,000. I don't remember anymore, but it was enough to be like, all right, I'm all in. This is cool.
It was $200. I remember.
Okay, so, there we go.
And in 2016,
and enough to be like, all right, this is what I want to do. So I you know, pretty much did that throughout my college freshman year. And you know, keep in mind, I'm 18, 19 at the time, and started making some pretty good money. Started having a following, and then, like you said, you know, I started like a pretty much a website with picks and things like that. And you could get, you know, back in the day, everybody would be compensated for
why did you start a website? Was this just like your entrepreneur brain or
pretty much, you know, I was making websites at the time, and I actually made websites for a bunch of companies. Cause you could just literally say, hey, listen, your website is horrible. You need a new one. I had a web guy, you know, you could make a little bit of a spread, have some beer money for, college and, you know, continue on. So, that's pretty much how I got into it. And then you start to, you know, see the other side, what else is out there. So For me, I started, you know, accepting money to be able to, you know, put them on my own website where I would, you know, have picks and basically putting the information out to subscribers or people that read my my website. So where I ended up going wrong is I traded them as well. So you can't trade them. And, you know, all my checks and balances were with people that are in the same business, making a lot more, doing a lot more. And, you know, I look at them and say, hey, you know, I'm not doing what they're doing. I'm fine. And, you know, long story short, you make a couple bucks and you are part of the wrong deal. A lot of people on the other side are doing the wrong thing, including, you know, it's going as far as having offshore accounts and things that I would, you know, never do. They get busted. And then I end up getting a knock on the door and it's like, whoa. So I go from, you know, doing extremely well. And like you said, figuring out some of these OTC promos back in the day, just like a lot of people do in the filings, you look at certain names, certain people in the 13Gs or the 8Ks, things like that, ones that you see over and over and over again. And it was similar to that, where there was always this one LLC that was connected to all of these. So you knew it was just a matter of time. Yeah. And so you just kind of sneak in, because if you showed your hand and were like, hey, I'm coming in for 50,000 shares, then they're going to be like, no, you're not. We're going to dip you out. And they, you know, they'd flush it down, pull the bids, and you wouldn't be able to, you know, get out.
Grimy assholes.
Yeah. So you had to kind of sneak in. And it literally was just a waiting game. So, and these stocks used to go up, you know, literally every single day. And then mailers would hit, if you guys remember. Or
what was the timeline on these stocks? Like, how long were you holding them? When did you notice?
Like 3 months, like a 3 month kind of like chart build. And then there would be like these glossy mailers that would hit. And, you know, it'd be like, hey, this company is amazing. I actually have, like,
I think I do. That's crazy to me. We definitely wanted to save a lot of the SEC.
I literally kept all the mailers.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah.
And like, you know, all the reasons why to buy particular stocks. And I mean, literally, you can see like.
Yeah, look at that. Wow.
Over 600%.
Looks like Motley Fool.
Yeah, pretty much.
We definitely are going to, we wanted to touch on like the SEC and like what all the Twitter investors nowadays. Towards the end, but I definitely thought it was interesting that you said you're having these for like 3 months and you still got the knock on the door, which seems crazy. Like
that was unrelated. That's how I made a lot of money.
Right.
And then the way that I also made a lot of money was with having my own website and pretty much having sponsored companies on there. So, but where I went wrong is trading those stocks. And then that's when I went from hero to zero and pretty much lost all of my money and had to restart. And like you said, came up with that account that I forgot about. It was at AB Watley. I had, you know, accounts all over the place. And I just got this tax form 1 year and I was like, what is this? And that was kind of my
mentioned your interest rate. Right? You're like, why? Where is this interest coming from? And
because the year that was interest.
Yeah. The year that I forget about 25 grand, I'll feel like I've made it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it was more of like a situation of like, you're closing all you're getting rid of all your cash, figuring out what the heck's going on. Yeah. And, you know, during all of that, you forget about one.
Well, I mean, you touched on it, but so was it more your naiveness of not knowing that you can't trade the ones that you promote? Was that kind of like where you got, because I do see underneath a lot of your posts, a lot of people do link the article that named you. And for anyone that doesn't know, Nate, I believe you got fines. You didn't have to, you weren't, what's the word I'm looking for? You didn't have to, you know, admit any wrongdoing.
Right.
And so I do see people that post it underneath your comment section. You know, does it kind of peeve you off when you see that? Because I mean, I know the guys that, because I think of the 8 people mentioned, there was only 2 of you that didn't get charged criminally, if I'm remembering correctly. Does it peeve you off?
I mean, I used to let it, but you got to think about like who's actually responding. And typically it's like when they're losing the conversation, or if I shorted their stock or something like that they're emotionally connected to, that's their last like straw. And they're like, all right, well, there you go.
So and now you so feel like you know you've that won that's the like, conversation. Okay. Okay. Now
yeah, it's you
like,
know that if they link that's they failed. They're down. Yeah. They're red.
Because it's like this. Who even knows how many of these Twitter furus have them? Not to name names, but I mean, Buy Sell Short has one $30,000, I believe. According to the internet.
There's a lot of people that have them, and I mean, back then, I mean, what you know now is just absolutely nothing compared to what you knew back then. There was no education. There was no like chat rooms. I mean, there was some chat rooms, but there was no, there was Investors Hub. There was All Stocks message board and a couple other things. There was no anything to educate traders back then.
What do you think is the difference now between like you getting that knock at the door to, you know, maybe me or Hugh getting a knock at the door?
Well, I mean, if you're getting compensated for stocks, then you should be disclosing it. You shouldn't be trading them. I mean, that's right. Really what it comes down to. There's people all the time that are doing things and you can read about them that are, you know, in a ring that are, you know, somebody's getting compensated for it and, you know, putting out, you know, false press releases and things like that. That's really where the issues are. There isn't, you know, you putting out your plays and things like that is not really, people talk their books all the time on CNBC. And I think they allowed, you know, hedge funds to be able to do it like a couple years ago. I think before you couldn't, but now they can. And I think that's when Icon joined Twitter and stuff like that. So
yeah, it's become such more like a casual thing to talk about like how much you're making. And I think like that's kind of dove into this.
Some people talk about what they're making or what size they have and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's not for me. I'll just let everybody else do that. But,
casually have your account balance in the background.
I don't have my account balance.
So, well, I mean, you touched on a little bit, but you do run Investors Underground, where, you know, you kind of teach how to fish. It's not an alert room. So when you do see me or, you know, let's call it Zach tweeting about something about a stock that we like, do you have feelings one way or the other? And if it's not me or Zach, do you feel like there should be some kind of regulation? Because it's not, you know, we talked about it. It's not, you know, I can tweet out that I like a stock, as long as I'm not being compensated for that tweet. But at a certain extent, you know, does it bother you if a YouTube star who, you know, does their morning trading or something, if they're keeping a low float up that you're short,
just say
Dave
Portnoy, dude. Just say Dave.
You know, does
I
it
see
bother
what you're doing.
You?
I see what you're doing.
I'm not doing anything. I'm just asking you. Does, you know,
I think it comes down to intent and, you know, what's your intent with it? And so I have mad respect for people that buy and they're actually holding. The people that are buying and then they're selling when they're saying they're buying or they're, you know, selling 3 cents higher. I mean, you would need an expert, you know, testimony for like, you know, to say, yeah, that's what I think this person's doing. Yeah. And unfortunately that's the hard part to kind of prove something like that. But, you know, guys that are taking on positions and they're actually holding for weeks and things like that. That's fine. If you're tweeting just to like, you know, exit right into that, then, I don't think that's, you know, always the best thing to do. I mean, I guess you technically could. But I think it comes down to intent and, you know, if you know what you're able to do and you're taking money from people and, you know, you're streaming it and trading live, I mean, that's a conversation for another time. I don't like to speak badly about anybody, but I just don't think that, that kind of stuff's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I definitely get that. So you know, I see you and Zach, you know, having fun on Twitter. You know, you did congratulate Zach on his big AMC day. You know, what do you think about the current climate that we're in with the retail traders? I mean, I don't know, you know, I'm not sure about the statistics, but we're seeing millions and millions of new accounts open. You know, has Investors Underground just Have you guys seen a huge spike in members, or and how do you feel about, you know, what's happening? And do you think that this is sustainable for the future, and that this is a new wave of trading, or a new, you know,
yeah, comparable? I do. I mean, we've grown for sure. I mean, I think everybody in the industry has grown overall. Like you said, I mean, there's millions and millions of new traders that are all going to go somewhere. So I think that it, I think I've tweeted it recently, but I think we're probably third inning or so. You know, if you kind of compare it to baseball, nine inning kind of game, and you know, you never know. I mean, we could easily go longer than that, but I don't think that people get how great it is that are just starting out. Like, this is not normal, you know. And if you go back like a year, I had a couple guys in my office in New Hampshire, and so he was just getting into trading. I'm like, listen, like, it's not always like this. So like, don't get used to this, and just know, like, if it stops doing all these crazy 100% moves every single day, you got to know when to put on the brakes. And so then it cooled off for a little while, and he's like, yeah, I see what you mean. And then all of a sudden this happens, and I can't even imagine coming into it in this climate. So I don't see it going anywhere. I think that traders are a lot bigger than you think right now, just because people have just made money is so fast, so quickly. And it's a lot like the dot-com boom. And, you know, I didn't trade that, but I know a lot of people made a lot of money, and I know a lot of people gave a lot right back. So you saw even like UAVS today, or even something like Riot, you know, things like that, where, you know, things will stay up. Everybody's loaded and they know what they're doing. They're the best trader in the world because, you know, the price says so. But then all of a sudden, 50% drop, and then there's half your money. So that's going to happen to a lot of different names. It's going to happen on all these other names that have run up, like MVIS and you know, everything that has been a super hated name that has squeezed out and, you know, just crushed shorts, and also convinced longs that they're right. And then it's just going to take one day like today where UAVS goes from 13 to 8, and you know, that's it. And then it's the long road to the steady fade back to 1. And you know, that's what happened with OTCs back in the day. That's how I learned, you know, where I made a whole bunch of money, and then you just hold and you hold and you hold. You're right. It's not a loss until you sell, and then all your money's gone. So that's a long answer to yes, it's gonna last a long time. We're in the third inning, and like you said with Zach, he crushed it, and I give him a lot of credit because it's very hard to not take gains, right? So in order to get to where he got on AMC, he had to not take X, not take 2X, not take 5X, not take 10X, and that's hard to do. And so it was a really nice trade, and it was impressive, and heavy kudos to him. And I mean, it's a very difficult thing to do because you're going to be upset more often than not when you hold things, because there's going to be a lot of overholding in order to get to the promised land.
You'd know better than to come on this podcast and insult our you know, I didn't. Yeah, this is what be smart, man. You'd have like five, you'd have half a million like nerds ready to.
Oh, yes.
So like you mentioned about the dot-com bubble, like my mom was investing in the dot-com bubble, mentioned she made like $500,000 and then lost it all. I guess, you know, Diamond's mom. But you know, clearly there's some kind of bubble, and you know, obviously there's two things you can do. You can complain about it, or you can do your part to inflate it. I'm doing the second. But what would you recommend to these new investors to, one, avoid, like you said with the OTC thing, you know, avoid buying the dip until it just keeps on dipping? And also, it's like, what bubble are we in? Because there's so many sectors. There's a short squeeze sector. There's the coronavirus sector, which leads to food delivery sector. And so many. It's like, are these just a bunch of bubbles in bigger bubble?
Yeah, I think you have to understand which one you're in or which sector is hot. And there's a lot of sector rotation, right? So you go from the last 2 weeks, you had all the pot stocks, right? So would SNDL have gone and done what it did if Tilray was not, you know, doubling every single day, if CGC was not going nuts? No, it wouldn't have done that. And so you have to understand, you know, what is moving. And if the entire sector is moving, all the other ones are going to move with it. And so as that rotates and the money comes out of that, then they went into blockchain. You have to understand that they're all into blockchain. Now they rotate out of that. And, you know,
what's every stock is blockchain, Nate.
Every stock true. Is blockchain.
Yeah. When you say they, who, because I, this is a question that I get a lot.
Everybody asks, who's they?
I've long considered making a video that's me like, who's they? They're raising, who is they? And like me searching for they.
The way that I think about it is like the market participants that have that invisible hand, right? So, you know that somebody, I mean, anybody, if you had enough balls, you could potentially just keep on buying and buying. And you know, whether that's right or wrong, I don't care. I'm just a participant. But
so you're not they.
I'm not they.
Okay. Thank
God. But I like they. I like they.
I'm getting close to finding out. Any hints? Send them to my
email. They is like just, you know, if something cracks and it holds, they are supporting it. You know, that underlying invisible hand. And, getting back to like what you said, right, with, you know, the millions and millions of traders and kind of adapting and all of this, is it's all about supply and demand right now. So there's only so many shares available and there's only so much out there. So if the demand continues to be so high, which is they, and the shorts or the sellers, you know, typical sellers run out and then there's extra sellers because there's shorts. If the demand keeps on going, that's why we're in the situations that we are.
You say there's only so many shares available, but apparently when you're shorting, there's like 150%.
That's good. And that's the other thing too, is like, you know, you have all these people that get so angry about, you know, if you short their stock or whatever, but why do you think that it's up? You need shorts. You need people to be betting against your stock in order to have these moves that we've had. So I never understand why people get upset if, you know, somebody is negative on something, because, you know, that is why everything is running. But I mean, yeah, it's a mathematical equation based on, you know, what's available. And, you know, just like we learned in the GameStop, I mean, there was more than the float, you know, loaned out. So, you know, maybe that's a problem. It definitely is at some stage, but I mean, if it creates crazy moves, I'm all about it.
Yeah. Well, so you touched on it and I feel like there's so much that people can learn, because I think one of my favorite things is your Sunday night scans, and you talk a lot, you know, you adapt with the market. And I think that's one of your, from, you know, watching from the sidelines, one of your biggest strengths is the ability to adapt, you know, whether it be, you know, intraday, or even, you know, longer term swinging. So, the sentiment is that you enjoy shorting more than going long. You know, I mean, you can see it with your, your tweets that don't exactly say go all in SNDL, or, you know, or when you use puns, have you changed to more long term inside this market? Or have you really seen like a real fundamental change in your trading strategy recently?
Yeah, it took me a while. I think I've become very long biased over like the last 6 months. I would say probably 6 months was my turning point where it took me a little while to trust this, just because it was like, how long can this last? Like, we're seeing the craziest things ever. Like, literally, how long can this go on? And then it goes on and then it goes on. It gets crazier. So that took me a little while to just kind of embrace the chase, like I've been talking about, and just like deal with it. Like, it is what it is. And there's just so much demand right now. You just got to roll with it. So
I love embrace the chase. That sounds good. Embrace the chase. That sounds good. I like that.
Yeah. You just got to do it. But you made me lose my train of thought.
My bad.
So you said that took you about 6 months to really get used to this market.
Oh, yeah. So I'm probably, I would say 60-70% long most of the time. But I would say my conviction, my size, my You know, just really getting into a large position would be on the short side. I'm more confident. I'm comfortable with it. I'm patient, and I wait for things to roll over. I wait for, just like you on the Sunday scans, you wait for the pop dip buyers to become pop sellers. I'm very good at just waiting and waiting and waiting and letting it roll over. Because what happens is, yeah, you could have that 2-3 week move up, and that's great. It's great long.
Yeah.
But that unravels in 1 hour. And so that's why I really like shorting. And that's why I focus on stocks. And it's just because I short a stock one day does not mean I think it's going to go, you know, lower over the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or long term. It's just, it's reached a peak for a short period of time, and I see an opportunity. And that happens to be something that I'm very good at. But I've been mostly long, like the IRA that I trade, obviously I can't short. And, you know, that's been insane. Insane growth. And in my long trades during the day, I just join pretty much anything that hits my scanners that has a good daily chart, a good trend. And, you know, if it, not necessarily the first move, but if it holds trend, it's worth the risk in this market where you might risk 5 or 10%, where most go 20, 50, 100, or, you know, quadruple.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think to follow up with that, if you were a newer trader, and let's say, you know, I'm 8 months in, or actually I'm coming up on a year. So when the lockdown started happening, I started having another screen next to me. You know, I work, you know, 9 to 5, but I get to have another screen. You know, when this starts to change, or even right now, you know, if I feel like I can do this full time because I've made 400% on my account.
Yep.
What would you tell the masses? Now, obviously there's different scenarios, but what would you tell the masses? If I'm a year in, I've seen huge success. But you know, I know that this can't last forever, but I feel like I could potentially do this forever.
Right. Well, I think it comes down to process that I talk a lot about. So as long as you have an underlying process, like it actually makes sense why you made this trade. And it's not just something like I got lucky a few times and I made a bunch of money, or you know, things like that. If you have certain strategies that you can identify and say, I took this because it was this setup, I shorted this because it was this setup, and you actually can, you know, if I were to ask you, what's your strategy? Like what's your best trade setup? If you can answer that and you do that consistently, then I think that's a step in the right direction. And then what I tell people typically is, you know, as long as you have about 2 years of cash, you know, in the bank from trading, not just because you saved up, but proof that you could take money out of the markets, then, you know, that, in my opinion, gives you enough time to kind of give it a shot. But if you're in a situation where you can do both at once, just do both as long as you can until, you know, one starts to, you know, take over the other, and it's not, it's, you'll know when it's right. And I talked about this last Sunday, but a buddy of mine, you know, the more you're at the screen, you're going to do a lot better. When COVID hit, he was not doing general contracting. His account started to really rocket over those 3 months when he was at his desk. And then when he started to work more, started to, you know, kind of go the other way. So there is definitely, if you're having success and you have a strategy, the more you're at the desk, the better, in my opinion, that you're going to do in the long run.
Yeah, definitely.
So we touch on risk management a lot here. And we also mentioned earlier the motorcycle story. And to kind of give them a skim, you had around $300,000 in a position. You know, it was down a little bit on the day. You weren't too worried about it. You got a call. You had to move your motorcycle. All right, whatever. I'll go move the motorcycle.
No big deal. They always go up.
Yeah. No stocks only go up. You check the Palm Pilot.
Palm Pilot.
Level 2's not looking good. It's looking like it's down about 50%. You get back, and your whole moral of the story is just let it get towed. Yeah. How did that change your trading in general? Because I imagine that was quite a large position of yours. And, it, you know, I just having a big loss like that is such like... As opposed to having someone experience himself, what did you learn from that aside from just let your motorcycle get towed?
Yeah, I mean, that was early on, and that was still kind of I think I've learned a lot more from more recent losses than that particular one. That one was more of those, one of those situations where it was just like, whoa, like, what am I doing here? Like, yeah. Like, am I going to be able to make this? You start to question everything. Am I going to be able to do this long term? Because a good portion of my money at the time was coming from riding these things up. And, you know, if that stopped, you know, am I going to be able to continue to do this? Is this going to be a viable, you know, thing long term? And so you start to, you know, wonder whether or not it's gonna be good. It was a tough day. And I think, I lost probably about half, and then it bounced and I was able to minimize the trade. But I think more so the risk management is super important. That is the only reason why people fail at this. It's not necessarily finding the winners. It's about, you know, losing your account. So I think that, if you always go back to those situations where you knew you should have sold and kind of find like that, how you felt at that time and remember that when it happens again, it's going to help you out. You know, there's certain wicks, pullbacks, there's certain things that happen and you're like, I knew I should have gotten out at that point. And so when that happens again, you need to be able to recognize it. Just same thing with like my Kodak loss. You know, there was like probably 15 times where I was like, I really should be out right now. And I was, you know, watching different streaming services that were potentially going in and out of stock, you know, just like we started this. And I felt pretty confident that the retail was on the wrong side. And so I overstayed, you know, and the circuit halt. But it brought me back to, there was 15 times that I knew that I shouldn't have still been in the trade. So that was probably the biggest takeaway from that loss, more so than the one when I was, you know, 18, 19, 20, just throwing money at, you know, random stuff.
Well, you know, you just talked about it. The feeling of, can I do this? I took a sizable loss in January, and yep. I wasn't sure I was long, and it did hurt. Not necessarily, you know, I mean, I knew that I could come back from it financially, but do you still get that feeling of, can I do this? Or have you been doing this so long that it's like, you know, it's more about, you know, getting yourself back in check? Because I think that's one [S2] Yeah. [S1] Of the biggest questions I get is the psychology part of it is, you know, the winning feels so great when you are able to, yep. you know, do 20% of your account, you know, for some retail traders that, you know, want to maximize gains.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the lows. So do you still get those kind of days where you're like, you know, I'm ready for something a little less stressful?
Those not those kind of days. Just yep. like the 4 a.m. to 8 p.m.s are the ones that get me now, when you have the GameStop and the AMCs. But I'm pretty good at risk management. Occasionally, I'll run into like some type of issue where I get a little stubborn. But at this point, it's like I don't want to give away more than a day or two. So okay. I'm pretty good about that, which could actually be a pretty big P&L swing these days. So but that happens to everybody. And one of my really good friends went through that, you know, just like I was talking about general contracting, and then he would lose, but then you start to compound because you try to make it back, and you have the least confidence you've ever had. Can I even do this? Am I doing it right? And what happens, you start to get trigger shy and you don't want to make the trades because you're afraid to dig the hole lower. There's a good chance that the next couple of days are actually going to go lower. And then that's when you say, all right, like, what am I doing here? And the fear comes from, where's bottom? And I think it's that first day that you bounce off bottom that you're no longer trying to find bottom. You've got that wiggle room and you can start to go. So that's why I always talk about, like, I could probably be doing 3 or 4x what I'm doing right now. But if I was wrong and I was that size, then I don't know. I might be what you're talking about. You know, yeah. I don't want a $3 or $4 million loss. That's not what yeah. I'm interested in. And that's too stressful for me. So I'd rather take less and just fire every single day and do the best that I can and, you know, see where it goes. And in this market, it compounds well. So the other point to what you're saying too, is when you're growing that account and when you're pushing that account, the problem is that, you know, everybody wants to keep sizing up, but you should start to size up this way, not just one, but start to diversify. I'm not saying different sectors and all that kind of stuff, but don't put it all in one basket, because what happens if you're in that stock that has an offering and it drops, you know, 30, 40, 50%, you know, you don't have a chance. So I think that's probably the biggest, because everybody wants to compete. Everybody wants to catch up to what they see online, and it's just not realistic. You know, there's a lot of people are killing it. Yes. But if you try to keep on chasing, you got to be okay with getting hit. And it's not fun when you get hit and you question everything, like you said.
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, I had plenty of those days, because I definitely try to push it. Even though I'm not necessarily account building, I definitely try to push it. And January was one of those days where I was like, oh man, like, you know, I'm about to be done school. You know, I could go work at JP Morgan or something and be done. And you touched on it about scaling up, or, you know, once you get to a certain number, you know, you want to keep pushing it and making your starters bigger and your core positions bigger. How do you, when you were scaling up, did you have, or even if you still are, do you have a formula, or how do you think the best way as a trader really starting to make an impact on this portfolio, what is the right way for them to scale up?
I think it comes back to that strategy and process, right? So if you have your best setup and, you know, and you can identify that. And as that sets up, riot last night, I was like, the magnitude of this opportunity is just absolutely unbelievable. And we got that trade today. And that's something where I am 100% high conviction. And if I lose, I lose. You know, I'll have a risk parameter, but I'm willing to risk on that particular day because it's a 90% likelihood of me being right on a particular setup like that. If I wait, and if I'm, you know, if I scale in as it heads down, but you know, in a situation like that, that's where you start to size up. You don't just go 2x, 5x, 10x on every single name you're trading, because you are going to get hit. You're going to get chopped up. You're going to get thrown around. But for me, it's what are you best at? And, you know, AMC, GME, Riot today, we had, I shouldn't say it, CCIV, that cult is, that's a wild cult. You can't talk negatively about CCIV.
I have puts on it, bro. I got puts on it, man. And I have such a small position of puts. I miss the party. I'm calling the cops on it. You know what I'm saying?
And do not talk negatively. So, your DM box.
I get so much hate. I'm like, dude, crazy. I have $350 in it. Yeah. Dude, I'm not breaking.
But that's an example of the current, you know, the these are the investors and they think they know everything because the stock went from
they 10 don't to care 10. About fundamentals.
Yeah, and they don't, they're proven right by price, which is great. But if you want it to pull back, why do you think QS went to whatever 120, 125? It's because people were saying this doesn't make sense. It should pull back. You know, this is a no-brainer short at 60. So you want that. If you're an investor, you want that. But meanwhile, they just literally go nuts. And it's
stocks kind of
funny. Yeah. But yeah, I 100% find out what you're best at. And when those setups happen, and it's not every day, you know, it's not every day that I'm like, all right, I'm just going to go balls to the wall on this particular name. No, you wait for that. And I used to say it was like two or three times a month, right? And you nail that trade two or three times a month. And that literally can make your year, you know, if you do that each month. And then the rest of the time, it's about staying alive and becoming, you know, a better trader. But today we have them two or three times a day. So it's really about not wasting time as a short seller, finding the top, letting other people find it, wait for it to either parabolic or break down. Or on the same thing, if you're a long trader and it's that perfect breakout setup, consolidating, starts to break out prior highs, consolidates and goes. And going back to your other point about sectors, you know, what's hot? Is it a low float? You know, low floats are all running. Like, this is a no-brainer. Is it a pot stock? Pot stocks are all running. Boom. You know, take that. So it's all like putting all those things together with what you're best at is where you size. Otherwise, you just, you know, kind of dabble along the way and scale in if you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. What do you think is your, not your best setup, but what do you think is your best tool? You know, as a trader, you've been doing this 18 years, I think you said recently. So you're at year 18, you know, and obviously it changes throughout the years. But right now, what do you think is your biggest setup or your biggest asset? You know, when you're coming to the market, you know, because I think that's one of the questions that I get a lot. And it's, for me, at least, it's not a question that it's just, this is it. And it kind of goes, I see your scanners inside the back. It kind of goes to when I get asked, you know, what scanner do you use and do you buy instantly? And for that, I can affirmatively say that there's no scanner out there that, you know, and that's why there's not, you know, huge AI trading is that, you know, there's no scanner out there that is 100% correct and 100% a buy signal. But what do you think is your best asset when you come to the market?
I would say identifying range.
Okay.
And I probably should trade options a lot more. You know, like yesterday I bought 68 puts at the close on Riot. And, you know, you look at it at 82, 81, 80, whatever, and you're like, there's no way it's going to go there. I mean, technically, I should have bought 58 puts or whatever. Now it's 58.75 after hours. But identifying, like, if this breaks out, if it opens up, where could it potentially go? And also on the downside, where could it potentially flush out to? So I would say that's probably my best asset where I'm able to capture a lot of gains where a lot of people might not think that far ahead, right? So we're at Traders for a Cause one time, and I was on a panel with somebody, and it kind of opened my eyes because he was in a name. He was talking about, you know, some of the ways he trades, but he's in a name, but he's already thinking about if he adds, like, what's going to happen after the next ad. And he's like, you know, he's a chess player, so he's like already on, you know, 15 steps ahead, and so that you kind of think about that. So if this breaks here and you scale in here, where could it potentially go? And I think that would probably be my biggest asset, both to the long side and the short side.
When you say range, are you talking about just where it can go during that day? Or are you talking about, like, you're looking at like a yearly chart and you're saying it can, you know, it has this much room to fall or
probably like a relatively short period on the daily, but mostly, you know, within the last couple of days. Situation like Riot, FCEL or Plug or these big momentum trades that are, you know, squeezing out. SNDL, for example, you know, SNDL was at 2 and, you know, I didn't trade it. I'm not saying told you so or anything like that. But like,
you can.
the fact that it was like 250 and I said the next morning it could be like go to 4 to 5. And that's where I'd be interested in shorting. I think it hit 480 or something like that. But being able to anticipate that potential range, where's the emotional attachment to it? Where are people going to be, you know, freaking out? And then where could it unravel to? And being able to, getting back to, you know, bigger profits, bigger gains, and really sizing up, not necessarily sizing up, but like letting that trade work, you know, rather than just taking that first move, there's so much more. And I've said that before where, everybody's so focused on nailing that first pullback, right? Or that first breakout. But there's so much more after that initial candle that, you know, ends up being a lot easier. So, you know, take the focus away from nailing it and then focus on the meat. And I guess the answer to your question would be like the meat of the move is sort of what I mean by range. Like how much meat is available in the event that it unwinds or breaks out? How high could it go?
Okay.
Or low.
Okay. Definitely.
Yeah. Just knowing, I think another thing we talk about a lot on here, definitely technicals and also learning the personality of stocks, which I think,
you
know, obviously super important. And I'm a big range and personality trader too. And there's so many times I'm like, I should totally be playing these options more. I'd be a billionaire.
I finally did. I did it on MGI. I did it on Riot this past week. I mean, I trade probably options 4 times a month. Like I don't do a lot of options. In the last, like before that, I did it on Zoom when it was crazy. And I did a couple like Wednesday, Thursday, Fridays. And, you know, I'm good at anticipating the days that it might drop $80. And, you know, that's worth it to take that risk. But I need to get a lot better at it. But I know that I'd probably start, you know, trading Thursday and Fridays and just go from a dollar to a penny, dollar to a penny, dollar to a penny.
There's nothing worse in the world than having options that expire in like a month that have been just worthless and you just have to see and they just remind you every day. Yep, that was a terrible decision.
Or the ones you bought a month ago and then they're about to expire. They do expire. And then the next week, the move happens that you needed.
Damn. Yeah, you're talking to my soul right now. But I mean, I think that's all I have. Hugh, if you have anything else, I think this is a great conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, I've learned so much from you. And you know, for everyone that listens, you know, your Sunday scans, they're a great resource. You put them out on YouTube. What do you do outside of trading that you feel like directly impacts your trading? I don't know if I'm going to talk more about this on this week's podcast, but someone who's really helped me is Killer T. He works at the fund 7 Points, and what he's helped me do is I've gotten into meditation, and that's really helped me focus in for the day. Just doing that, you know, 11 minutes or 12 minutes. You know, that's really after January, I took that loss, you know, and that really helped me came to focus. And since then I'm back to all time highs plus. Yeah. And so is there anything that you really can attribute to trading well that you do outside of trading?
I mean, eat right, work out are two main things. I talk about that a lot. And, you know, how many times you've forgotten to eat during the day, you know, and you end up, you know, 4 o'clock, you're like, why do I feel the way I feel? So that's one. I do pre-made meals. I make sure that I work out. I used to work out all the time and go to the gym with a trainer, but now I just do it on Zoom. But I think that's important because it mind right, trade right kind of thing. I don't meditate per se, but, you know, I do take my walk, clear my head, and it could be a minute, it could be, you know, 5 minutes, doesn't matter, but I just do that. And I do that sometimes pre-market, but I also, the main thing is really after market, like 4:10, you know, go take a walk. If I don't do that, then I'm strung out till 8, 9, and like I haven't unwound. All I need is 5, 10 a minute walk and I'm good to go. But that's really being able to just zone in and focus pre-market, I think is probably the most important thing that helps me out. There was a period of time, maybe like July, August, September, and my son was maybe 3 months, 4 months. And, you know, I ended up feeling bad for my wife because she's doing everything. And so I try to take care of him in the morning as best as I can and as long as I can. And then I realized I'm just literally showing up like to the market to trade and I'm not getting prepared. So fortunately, my mom's been able to come. But that time in the morning of just doing mindless activities, which could be a form of meditation like you're talking about, just like not being focused on anything except checking out the market, doing your own thing, zone in, complete game changer. And and if you're rushing to the screens in the morning, if you're not taking time in the morning for yourself, then I think you're going to just be all over the place. And
do you do anything special to handle your red days? Your red days.
I'm pretty good at resetting. You know, I'm Eric Wood was like an amazing, you know, kind of mentor in that sense where like, how the heck could he just lose that and then just be fine the next day and he'd make it all back? And I used to go and you know, kind of trade in real small and be afraid to trade the next day. But it's just that mental reset, like it is what it is. And that's what comes down to making sure that it's a loss that is, you know, it doesn't impact you, right? Whatever, you know, and I get more angry or upset at not the lost number, but the action that I didn't take when I knew. Like I'm more mad about that than you know, a negative P&L.
Pissed off at your, like, damn it, 1 p.m. me did not act right.
Yeah, like, and you go back and you know that you should have taken it off there. And, you know, just like the slippage, unneeded slippage or stress, like right now, you can just trade in the zone and just like be patient and wait for the things. But if you force things right now, the range is so big that
you just got to wait for it to come to you.
If I mean, yeah. Look at SCKT a couple, you know, a week ago or whatever.
Yeah. Sock it.
You're on the wrong side.
That was a huge trap. Yeah.
You don't even need a big position. And you know, everybody trades different sizes, but even 30, 40, 50,000 shares, all of a sudden it swipes up 10 bucks. That's a big number, you know?
Yeah,
and that happens. You know, that happens very quickly. I mean, it goes three, and you're like, what? So fortunately, I was not, you know, participating in that. I stopped, you know, a couple times and then nailed it at the end of the day. But that's one big change that I've made. It's just, you know, not worrying about, let's see what it does. Control your loss, control, you know, the trade, and you'll get it later if it sets up.
And just to finish up, you know, your intuition, it feels like, you know, when you post different things, you know, that your intuition is pretty much, you know, like spot on sometimes. I think you called it on the SCKT, to your point, I think you said almost to the minute, the downtick before it started to soak and swipe up.
Headaches, you know, are about to come. At it and it,
yeah, yeah. And I think that's what, and you posted it and I was like, wow, that's
incredible. So how,
yeah. And so how much do you feel like your intuition at this point goes into your trading? Because one of the questions that we get is obviously, you know, how do I know when to sell out? How do I know when it's trapping? Yeah. How do I know when it's soaking? And to a certain extent, you can look at level two and see the soaking and other things. But do you feel like your intuition is a big part of your game now?
Yeah, for sure. And that was they, by the way, that was soaking. Right. Yeah, no, I mean, it's a huge role, a huge part of what I do, because, I mean, as you know, you start to see things and you start to make adjustments based on, oh, wait a minute, that should have broke out there, or wait a minute, that should have broke down and it didn't. So, yeah, for me, and that's why I was like, you know, the headache's about to come. If this doesn't break down here, it's, you know, just seeing how it traded, there was no real like test of shorts, you know, it's just kind of like, let them come in, let them come in. And if it stopped going down, they're going to get screwed. So it's a lot of intuition for this kind of stuff. And as far as like developing that, seeing soakers, what I always tell the guys in the room is, you know, there's so many recorders out there, record your screens, record like the big ones, SCKT, record GTEC today. There was a huge stuff move. Record your screens, go back and, you know, either look at my commentary or somebody else that said it, you know, whatever was like, how the heck did he know that? Or how the heck did he see that? Now, it's not 100% every time, obviously, but there's a good chance that, you know, if there's a stuff move and it fails, it's going to unwind. And, you know, we had that on GTEC today, you know, newsletter bought into the high days.
What
and
do you
then,
mean by newsletter?
A particular YouTube streamer.
But, a morning streamer?
What's that?
A morning streamer is keeping a stock up?
It's possible. you know, but that's also, you know, kind of, you get information from that, right? Like it should have broke out there. Okay. Well, if, you know, 4,000 people just did the same thing, where are they going to go?
Yeah.
You know, if it didn't break out, if it did not go into that circuit halt and 4,000 people just bought the offer, where do you think they're going to come? They're coming to the bid. And that's information for you to be able to take advantage of. And, you know, I do that every single day.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Nate, we really appreciate this. I know that you, I mean, you're super busy. You have, I mean, you've written a book or two books.
Brady wrote it. My idea.
We can't.
Spell, read. Yeah.
It's an easy read. I can read it too. Actually, somebody told me I should go back and read it last week. They were like,
audiobook style.
What's
baby.
That?
Audiobook.
Oh, I know.
Style.
I know. We need to do that.
Sorry. What was the name of it?
Momo Traders.
So you have Momo Traders. You have the room Investors Underground.
Yep.
You know, you have the YouTube channel. Is there anything that I'm missing?
Traders for a Cause. We're going to do another one soon. Probably a seminar? A month or two, I think. We're going to do virtual again this year, I believe. I just feel like we have to kind of commit and know we're going to be able to sell the tickets for October. And I feel like if we're selling them in July, people are going to still be kind of wishy-washy. So virtual has been a super success for us. A lot more people were able to come and kind of see the quality. So we'll probably do that in, I think, either March or April.
And for our listeners, for anyone, you know, I go to them, we tweet about them or we tweet about it. You know, it's a great cause. You guys raise money and you guys have everything from not necessarily tax advice, but tax professionals all the way to short bias traders, long bias traders, psychology. Do you guys still have the recordings from, I think it was November, October?
Yeah, we did a thing called Project Impact, and you can get to it on tradersforacause.org. But it's all the recordings of that event, the COVID event, as well as the Vegas events from the prior years as well. So that's all accessible.
Thanks for mentioning that, because I get asked, because we mentioned a lot on our technical episodes. We actually talked about it the day y'all were having as like a reference to watch. So if you want to, again, one more time, nice and slow, let them know where to find that.
The recordings?
Yeah. Yeah.
impact.traders4acause.org.
Awesome. Awesome.
All right. Thank you so much. I think that's all we have, and we're so happy you came on, man. Love your Twitter account. Love Traders for a Cause, and just thanks again, man.
Thanks for having me. And you guys, this is pretty, you're like top finance or something. You're climbing the ranks.
Business. Business. We don't like to brag, but not just.
The only people we're competing with are Dave Ramsey and God right now. Man, we really appreciate it. So thanks again.
You bet. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Take care.
Later.